Diversity and inclusion programs have become commonplace in corporate America, and for good reason. Diverse and inclusive work environments see greater employee satisfaction, engagement, and creativity, which in turn drive organizational growth and success. Simply put, diversity and inclusion are good business. But what do successful diversity and inclusion programs look like? And what implementable steps can you take to improve diversity and inclusion in your company? In this podcast, I'm joined by two leaders in the diversity and inclusion space, FINRA's Audrey Lee and Denise Field, to explore initiatives they've established to advance equality at FINRA. From the FINRA studio in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Monique McNamara, and this is FINRA Unscripted. I thought we would start with the basics. What does diversity mean?
It's interesting. Here at FINRA, we have been very intentional on how we define diversity and inclusion. And diversity at FINRA is not just about visible differences. It's about everything someone brings to the table. Right? So it's about your diversity of experiences and skill set and your thought processes and how you approach problems. We really believe in the business case for diversity, the research-based business case, which is the more perspectives you bring to the table, the better, faster, more innovative the outcomes. Well, you can't just get that through the traditional definition of diversity as different, right?
Right. So talk about inclusion, though, because I think we used to say diversity, and now we say diversity and inclusion. It seems to be an integral part of the effort.
If you think of diversity as what you're bringing to the table, inclusion is really being a part of the process, right? So I had we had a colleague a couple of years back who said diversity is being at the dance and inclusion is being invited to dance once there, right? So it's about being a part of the solution.
And how do we see that here at FINRA? We have a strong diversity and inclusion program. I think a lot of major organizations these days have well-established diversity and inclusion programs. How do programs like these inspire success, both for employees and then also for the organization?
These programs definitely inspire you. I mean, just from a personal perspective, I'm a single mom, I'm a millennial. So, and when I walk through the doors at FINRA, I feel valued and I feel that I have a seat at the table. So that's what inclusion is for me. That's how it makes me feel. But on a broader note, we have an employee resource group program, or ERGs. So I think the ERG platform is definitely a great example of one of our diversity inclusion opportunities for employees to just flourish. If you look at, I believe, the 10 years or going on 10 years or so that we've had the program, I'm very proud of what we have achieved. We've actually won an award in terms of our ERG programming. But I think it's a safe space for employees. It's a very safe space for employees to do a variety of things. One is they can get stretch assignments. They can help increase their leadership competencies through the ERG platform. They have a voice, so they can reach out to Audrey and I if they want to say, hey, can I run this idea by you? How about this?
Give us examples of what are the focuses of the other employee resource groups.
We are launching our 9th ERG this year, and it's going to be focusing on generation. So not just a group for the millennials to get together, not just a group for the baby boomers, but for everyone to come together and be part of the conversation. We're going to talk about some intersecting points, right? We're going to talk about communication, effective communication, different styles. So we're really excited, and the organization is really excited. We've gotten a lot of energy around this. But just if you look across all of the groups, and if you look at the things that they're reaching out to Audrey and I about, it's pretty much the same. It doesn't matter if it's our military community focused group or if it's our Latino affinity employee resource group. They're really all coming together. They want to, you know, professional development, stretch assignments, navigating the organization, mentorship, things like that. So I would say it doesn't matter the group. We're really starting to see some common themes no matter, you know, what the group is.
Right. It seems to me going, you know, even having managed people who are in our employee resource groups and watching them have have opportunities to do things they may not do in their normal job, right? So, Denise, you've talked a little bit about how a D&I program, and especially one here at FINRA, can help employees. And Audrey, I want to hear from you.
I came to FINRA at a really interesting time 9 years ago. Yeah. We had just completed a very large merger of two legacy organizations. And part of the way that we decided as a leadership team that we were going to help bridge the gaps between those two legacy groups and create a one FINRA culture was through how we designed our diversity and inclusion programming, right?
Right. And a little background. So yes, the two organizations who merged to become FINRA were NASD and then the regulatory arm of the New York Stock Exchange.
And one of the charges put forward was we got to close this gap between these two cultures, these two businesses that came together and haven't necessarily found their way to warm and fuzzy as it relates to being as effective one organization as we could. And so part of what we tried to do is include diversity and inclusion as a part of our overall business strategy. So it's not just, you know, do we have programs that individuals feel like are enriching them and allowing them to bring their whole selves to work, right? But it's about making sure that everyone is included in that work and has equal opportunity to come together and be a part of the process. And so I always love to talk about the fact that through our ERG programs that we were fortunate enough to start a little later in our diversity journey than most organizations, we were able to steal shamelessly from other companies in terms of how we created our infrastructure. So we made it a part of the process that if you are going to be a member of the leadership team of an ERG, you could come from any part of the country that you want, right? So that strategic group that decides what you're going to do. In addition, if you're going to put on programming, it has to be available to everybody. And what that's done in very subtle ways, besides helping to alleviate kind of a sense of disenfranchisement that's easy to come in any organization when you're geographically dispersed, right, is also help people have warm conversations across business units, across geographies, across management teams that they may not have had access to before. So instead of needing to raise and escalate in order to get a question answered from somebody that was a part of another business, but that you have to interact with, you now have built relationships based on this whole other body of work that make it very simple for you to say, hey, oh, by the way, I had this issue come up. Is this something you can help me on? Help teach me what's going on.
Let's talk a little bit about what's been accomplished in the almost 10 years since the Diversity and Inclusion Program was established at FINRA.
I definitely cannot mention FINRA and not mention our Women's Forum. And Audrey, you can share a little about that. And then also we launched like this countrywide tour on inclusive leadership for the leaders.
Right.
And I get the opportunity to meet just people that I wouldn't have the opportunity to meet on a daily basis in my Rockville, Maryland office. But the inclusive leadership, in-person training, the women's forum, can't forget to mention the flexible work arrangements. So I think those are three or four that come to mind that I really enjoy. When you look back at where we've come from and where we have advanced, those are some that I would throw out.
Yeah, I think they're diverse ways of working, diverse ways of interacting. Acting and diverse opportunities for people. So, Audrea, looking back,
I mean, there are so many things that I'm proud of. I think, you know, as a diversity practitioner, it is just amazing to have actually witnessed cultural change, right? To actually have witnessed people finding value in others when silos didn't necessarily allow them to do that before. But when I think about the programs that I think have been most impactful, of course, our employee resource group program, we went from having, you know, 250 women in the D.C. Rockville area who launched an employee resource group that was focused on moving women forward and on domestic violence. I definitely don't want to lose
Women's Network.
Yeah, that's right. That legacy. Yep. So we went from 250 to having 43% of our organization belonging to one or more of our now nine employee resource groups.
Right. That's a huge shift.
It is huge. And And it's active involvement at every level of the organization, which is amazing. I think, second, we're very, for me, very proud as well of the Women's Forum, but also the Men's Forum. So we started a few years ago bringing women together around leadership competencies and having a full day of enrichment that was totally internal with speakers of very high caliber, external in the financial services industry. And all of a sudden, Denise and I had to pause and say, what about the dudes, right? So are we being exclusive, inadvertently leaving out, you know, a large portion of our population? And so 2 years ago, we actually launched a Men's Forum, which is a day-long program where we bring in academics and we bring in speakers to really help motivate and equip men for the issues that they find most important in terms of work-life balance and excelling in professional development in their careers. I also just would be remiss if I didn't mention our Diversity Dialogue program, because right. that really is where our senior leaders will go out and talk to small homogeneous groups of employees, right, and say, what are we doing well? But most importantly, as valued employees with no hidden agenda on the table, what are we not doing well?
In a small private environment, what's going on? What do you want us to know? How can we make things better? So I'm glad, you know, that you brought that up, because those are ongoing.
Yes.
And now not just run by the CEO. I think we've extended that to the senior team.
Absolutely. So our CFO has been out there. Our chief legal officer, you name it, they've gotten out there. And what's really I think eye-opening is the response that they have when leaving, right? Because our senior team is tasked with making sure the strategic direction of this organization is on point, right? And sometimes there hasn't always been the opportunity for the voices of the people it impacts the most in terms of work processes and products to be able to share, hey, if I could just give you a pause for 1 second, can we consider this? One of the things we heard loud and clear from our entire organization after we built all this great stuff, right, was who's being held accountable. And I'll say that one of the things that we did to address that, the perception and the reality of accountability around diversity and inclusion, is that our CEO, Robert Cook, one of the first things that he did in the space was to establish diversity and inclusion goals for all of his direct reports.
But I'm sure there's still more work to do, right? I'm sure every organization still has some work to do. So let's just spend a minute on looking forward now. Looking forward, what else is there for us to do at FINRA?
We do externally a program called the Diversity Leadership Summit, where we invite member firms to send representatives to a full day of professional development around diversity in New York. And this year, one of our speakers is Dr. Dobbin, who's a Harvard researcher who worked for years on research around, you know, what is it that makes diversity programs fail, right? The article came out in the Harvard Business Review back in the summer of 2016. And while I feel like we have done all the right things in terms of building out a suite of programs that can allow, that if people take advantage of them, right, that they can help continue to build, bring their 100% self to work, and we can leverage everything they have and get great performance. We do know that at some point we need to have continuous improvement and evaluation of those programs based on what the research says, right? And so there are quite a few things that the research that he has put out talks about, and one of them is around diversity training. There was actually an economist from here in D.C. who did similar work about 10 years ago. And basically, you know, we have a diversity training program, and every couple of years we do in-person training with our top leaders, and we do full organization-wide e-learning with everyone else in the organization. But what the research says is that people don't necessarily find it to be effective overall, generally, right? So not just our program, but any diversity training, because they didn't select to be in that training. They didn't decide that this was an area that they wanted to focus on. And so we're looking at how we can improve our approach to adult learning in that space and provide people with choices of topics in diversity that may be more inviting to them, something that they'll be more interested in, because at the end of the day, we just want you to get nuggets so that you can bring your whole self to work and you can help those around you bring their whole selves.
So it sounds to me like what we want to do to make sure that we continue to succeed in this space is really making sure we're having a real conversation about it, right? So we want to make sure that we are having conversation about whether our training works. We want to make sure we're having a conversation with employees about things that matter to them and how they might feel more included. At the summit, I know you have conversations with peers and colleagues in the financial services industry, and you know, the industry has done a lot, but has a lot more to do when it comes to diversity and inclusion. I know that that's something that gets talked about at the summit. And in fact, this year's theme is basically, you know, where are we now and where should we be?
Yeah.
So certainly on point. And just a little bit more about the summit. What are you hoping specifically at this meeting every year that people take away from this meeting?
We want them to leave and have actions that they can implement immediately in their organization. What's interesting is it's not just D&I practitioners that are at the summit. It's about 150, 170 business folk, right? So when we think about the proportion of people who come in this room for a full day of diversity professional development, about 60% of that people are not HR folk. They're not diversity practitioners. They're business folk who are coming in to make sure that they are leveraging the best and brightest of practices as they continue to grow and make their organization viable.
Denise, maybe you can talk to this. How are we working to ensure we have a diverse applicant pool?
When I first joined FINRA, I had no idea what FINRA was, right?
So you and many other people.
Yeah.
Out there to educate them all, right?
So, and this comes up sometimes with applicants, and I hear it from folks. And through our ERG platform, the ERG leaders said, hey, we want to be able to go out and be ambassadors of FINRA to help with our brand, to go out and advocate and make the community aware of our mission.
Which is to protect investors and keep the market safe.
Yes. So we do it on that front in terms of outreach and branding through our ERGs. Great organizations are doing more non-traditional recruiting, right? And I think one of the ways FINRA is also following suit is through our month of service offering. So FINRA employees get up to 2 days to go out into their communities to volunteer, whether that's with Habitat for Humanity or whatever the charity is. But for me, just last week, I used the month of service volunteer day to go back to my college that I attended, Virginia State University. I sat with a group of business majors and talked about FINRA and talked about the opportunities in the financial securities industry and what that means. So that's a non-traditional way of outreach and branding. I went to a historically Black college and university. So I'm in a room with minorities talking about an organization that they may not be familiar with, or they aren't majoring in this, but their majors can translate to working at FINRA. And then another thing that we're really paying a lot of attention to is ensuring that our interview slates are diverse, right? So not just getting a diverse applicant pool, but how are they advancing in terms of the process? So we're looking at a variety of angles of stretching our reach to get to the most diverse applicant slate that we possibly can.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just FINRA, right? I think that that everybody in this space owes it to their communities to make sure that little girls know that STEM is a course of academic success that they need to be invested in, to make sure that we have reached out to let people know that there is something else to do with your accounting and finance degree besides go and sell stocks and bonds, right? That the good guys are amazing.
Regulation's an excellent industry.
Regulation is an excellent, right. amazing thing. And so I think as an industry, we have many CEOs in financial services, including our own, that signed on to the CEO Action Pledge, right? Which Tim Ryan from PwC spearheaded. And it really talks about making sure that we are committed to checking bias here in our own organizations. And we're committed to outreach to others in terms of making all of our professional environments more inclusive. Yeah. I do think you hit the nail on the head. The onus is on the business community to reach back, reach down, and pull along all of these talented babies that are coming from a diversity of perspectives and experiences and exposure.
Absolutely. Right? Well, thank you both so much for your time today. My guests, Audrea Lee and Denise Fields. To learn more, visit FINRA.org. If you have an idea for a future podcast, email finraunscripted@finra.org, look for us on social media, or visit finra.org/podcasts. I'm Monique McNamara for FINRA Unscripted.
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form or reference them in any publication without the express written consent of FINRA.